I'm a diverse individual.
All of this shit is real.
Everybody like, what is it? Is he a family man? Is he a trapper? Is he a ladies man? Well, I'm all of it.
All of it.
I beat your ass, kiss your girl, and go tuck my kids in. And then I show up and lead a march on the weekend.
It's all real. Real.
This is Expeditiously. I am Tip T.I. Harris. Yes, sir. Hey, listen, man. This is another edition of Expeditiously, man. I am Tip T.I. Harris. And, hey, man, it's royalty in the building. And, you know, we pride ourselves on having interesting conversation with legendary people who are fit to discuss history and the status, helping to move the culture and the generation forward. In here with me today are two of probably some of my biggest influences, man, early on. And two of the greatest to ever do it, man. We have the legendary Ice Cube of NWA and also founder of the Big Three.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, and we have none other than Ladies Love, Cool J, Todd Smith in the building, man.
What up?
Hey, man. Hey, so first of all, I'm going to go on and say, you guys had such an incredible hand in me deciding what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. And I'm talking from 5-6 years old. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I told L.A. Out there on the floor that I'm bad with the first song that I kind of saw and heard and learned as a child, word for word. I used to run around in my little underoos singing that shit, you know what I'm saying? And you say, hey, Tip, man, come in here and do that thing you do. And I come in there and do I'm Bad, stay up an extra 30 minutes to an hour,
that's
you know
right.
what I'm saying?
That's right.
And Q, bro, you with, I think the first time I had an opportunity to experience you and your art is Straight Out of Compton. You know what I mean? And that was one of the CDs I snuck and listened to. My uncles gave it to me early on. And to be honest with you, man, I ain't never looked back. I never thought about being anything else aside from a drug dealer. You know what I'm saying? Like that, I knew that like it was either a life of crime or it was going to be a life of rhyme. You know, it was going to be one or the other. So I want to thank both of you guys for having a hand in helping me make the right decision.
No, that's right, man. Man, you know, it's the thing where I grew up, you know, mine was I Need a Beat from LL. You know what I mean? That's the first one that caught my ear, I Need a Beat. I knew LL was a ferocious MC. We was fans. I remember being 15, and my homie mother, KD's mother, bought Radio, the album.
Ooh.
And we just bumped it all day, man. You know what I mean? And then got a chance to meet LL. We was on tour, NWA, opening up, you know what I'm
right
saying?
But killing it.
For the young phenom, LL. Yeah, you know, we was just happy to be on a worldwide tour, you know. I mean, to be able to be on tour with LL and showed us love, you know. He showed us love. Didn't have to, but did. And then when I broke up with the group, he swooped through and picked me up. He didn't have to.
That must have been dark times, you know what I'm saying, when you with a unit that you used to riding with, writing with, recording with, touring with, and then you just make a conscious decision to break off and go on some nomad shit. That must be a pretty dark time.
Yeah, you know, it was dark and light. You know, it was dark because I was getting into it with some of the homies, but I was in New York, you know what I'm saying? I flew out there to figure out how I'm going to do my record.
Right.
And brothers like LL, Chuck, Big Daddy Kane, EPMD, you know, Red Man, K Solo, all them dudes just
the lyricists.
Yeah, they you know, welcomed me with open arms. You know what I'm saying?
It wasn't
nothing but love, and that gave me a lot of confidence that I can make it happen. You know, even if I was away from the West Coast, even in New York, I can make a dope record.
I think everybody, you know, was, you know, we all, you know, were inspired by what you were doing. You know, for me, it's like, you know, I get inspired because a vast majority of the game obviously came after me, but it's inspiring to see all the great things that all you guys do. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of like, it you know, it's a different type of inspiration because it just shows me how people can take things to new levels.
Sure.
Come up with new ideas, new concepts, new ways of approaching it.
Right.
Trap museums and
right.
big things. You know what I'm saying? So it's nice to, for me, that's inspiring. You know what I'm saying? Just to see men growing to their own. You know right. what I'm saying? Because I don't, you know, I feel like the OG, but at the same time, I look at men as men and recognize that, and I appreciate and respect that. So I see what guys are doing, and right that's on. Impressive because that inspires me to want to do more
right.
in my life, personally. You know what I'm saying?
Right on. I mean,
taking a new heist.
As if you haven't done enough already. You guys, like, literally created a platform. You know, the doors you kicked down, the seeds you planted, the steps you took, it created literally a platform for niggas like me to have something to do if we didn't want to go to school, if we didn't want to go to prison.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then, you know, it goes even further than me, down to the little babies and the gunners and, you know what I'm saying, the rest of the guys who putting on right now, present day.
Hey, what's going on, man? Tip T.I. Harris here. If you love the show, leave me a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, spread the word, and tell a friend to download and subscribe. And you should do that expeditiously.
What I want to know, or should I say what I want the next generation to know, is what happened when the switch was flipped in your head and you actually knew that you had an opportunity to be a professional at this? A lot of people don't know how to transition from being a kid who rap in the hood into, oh, I'm doing this shit for the bread now.
Yeah.
How was that transition for both of you guys?
Well, you know, it has to formulate in your mind first. You gotta, you know, some people think they writers.
Right.
Some people want to be writers.
Some people don't care to write it out.
Yeah. And, but some people know they writers.
Right.
They get published or not. And so I think, you know, when you come from the neighborhoods that we all come from, if you're not looking for that opportunity to do something legal and make a whole lot of money,
right,
you ain't looking. You know what I mean? You're tripping. You know, and when, you know, dudes in my neighborhood, they was banging and they was balling.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It was banging or playing ball. And music wasn't even on people's mind as much.
Right.
You know, fortunately, Dr. Dre moved down the street from me before he was the main. He was just a local DJ.
Right.
And I saw an opportunity to do something different. You know, even if it was just carrying crates to the club, you know what I mean? Or to the dance or whatever. I felt like doing that could lead to something more constructive than what was happening in my neighborhood, you know. So once I got around that environment of putting on the party and not paying to get in the party,
right,
that's when I realized, oh, it's an opportunity to make a living at this. It's an opportunity to take this as serious as I take anything, focus and try to come up and try to stay on that path. Because we all had a little spark that we all had to fan and fan and fan till it turned into a flame.
Right.
And we fanned it till it started to blaze.
Right.
But we got to do the fanning. You know, you can't just let it sit there or it's going to go out. So I just think just recognizing, damn, this is something different. Nobody in my neighborhood is really doing but me.
Sure.
Let's see how far it can take us. And it took us to the moon.
For me, it was like, you know, became a fan of the music at like 9.
Mm.
That's when, you know, Fearless Four and the Treacherous Three and the Crash Crew and Bambaataa and all the Zulu Nation was running around New York.
Right on.
It was like, you know, it was like the Essence. Grandmaster Cass, Cold Crush, all of them was running around. Tapes was flowing, Force MCs, tapes was flowing in my neighborhood.
Okay.
And I became a fan. And they used to do what you told me about I'm Bad. They used to do me with the Cold Crush.
Right.
Yo, come here, Todd. Rap this because they like the way I sounded. You know,
right.
So they make me rap like Kaz rhymes and rap the Cold Crush stuff.
Right.
So one thing led to another. At around age 14, you know, I wanted to make a record. I felt like I wanted to make a record because remember, you had Sugar Hill Gang, you had the Fearless Four, you had all these groups that were the kind of foundation of hip hop.
Okay.
We were the first generation raised on it, and I was like immersed in it, like, you know, Steve Jobs and Bill Gates and computers. I just lucked out and was born in that place, right?
Right.
So I knew it was possible because of the responses I was getting when I was at the parties, but when Run-DMC started driving around the neighborhood in new cars, I knew it was absolutely possible. You know, because so
that'll
we would
do
have
it.
Yeah, we would have Run-DMC sightings, right? You seen them? You know, dude, you see them? I saw them. Did you see them? We'd be excited and shit.
Right.
Yo, I saw them. And then, so I'm like, yo, I can do this shit. So I start trying to make, you know, records, and I was send demos in, like the Sugar Hill, and they would always they turn me down, send me letters turning me down, and
sure.
And finally, Tila Rock came out with It's Yours, which was it was a production company, Def Jam. It wasn't a label, it was on a Streetwise label, but it was the first production.
Right.
And I sent it in, and Ad Rock of the Beastie Boys
okay.
heard my demo and gave it to Rick Rubin.
Mm. Damn.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then, you know, the rest was history,
she
you know?
Took off.
And it really just You know, I met Rick, and he came downstairs. I was like, "You Rick?" He was like, "Yeah." I was like, "I thought you was black."
He had that cool.
He said, cool. And we went upstairs and shit. And
did he have a beard at the time?
He didn't have. He had a little light. He had a shadow.
Light beard.
He had some Miami Vice shit going on. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't the guru that he is today.
Yeah.
But he had some. But it was a hell of a time, man. And I knew it was possible. And then, and I wrap it up. But I did my first show, right? You know, my man Cut Creator drove me to the show. The axle broke on the car. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Boom! I'm like, fuck, we gotta get to the show. Fuck
damn.
This. Yeah. We walked like 10, 15 blocks.
Yeah.
I said, yo, leave that shit. Leave that shit. We going to the show. He like, no, my car. I said, leave that shit.
That's vision.
Yo.
Leadership.
Yo, we went to the show. And I remember the first show I ever did, I started signing autographs
what?
Right after the show.
Damn.
And I remember looking over at Cut Creator saying, yo, I like this.
Yeah,
yeah, I like it too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the rest is history.
See,
man.
I think from what I just heard, you know, Q, when you were speaking, the one thing that stuck out that I think the generation needs to hear is you in your head saw yourself as a creator and stepped out of the consumer position. So you made a conscious decision, man, hold up, man, I don't want to pay to get in parties. I want to be the motherfucker bringing people into parties.
Man, that was the fun part. You know, being part of the magic that made it happen.
Yeah.
Meeting Lonzo early, Grandmaster Lonzo. That was the Wrecking Crew. That's where Dre was part of the Wrecking Crew.
Okay.
Lonzo, Yella, Clientele. And they would go around doing parties, and they wasn't actually the top crew in LA.
Right.
Because the top crew in LA was Uncle Jam Army. They probably brought you to
that.
Town a couple of times.
Yeah, yeah.
But
Roger Clayton,
Uncle Jam Army, they was the top crew.
Right.
So Wrecking Crew was chasing them. You know what I mean? They had L.A. sold up. Wrecking Crew had Compton sold up. You know, it was always a thing where we had to get better and better and better and better.
Sure.
Because we wanted the number one spot.
Right.
And so I just rather hang around them because I knew what the hood was offering.
Oh,
I knew I could do that anytime I wanted to.
Right.
But this was something I couldn't do anytime. So I wanted to do it a lot. And I just took it serious. You know, where all my other homies was messing around, I'd be on that booth and slide, what record you need, Drake? You know, I'm working. I'm not playing. And that just snowballed into
taking it serious
me
takes you far.
Writing, yeah, into writing records. You know, me and Dre wrote a record. Dre, they had never had a hit in L.A., but we like, damn, we locals in L.A., and we can't even get on the radio in L.A.
Damn.
So... We fighting to get a hit. I'm trying to write a hit for the Wrecking Crew with Dre.
Right.
And we get it. We do a song called The Cabbage Patch Dance. And
did the dance come with the song?
The dance was out first.
Okay, cool.
The dance was
so
out
you
first.
Made a song about the dance.
Yeah, we made a song about the dance.
Yeah.
And it was a hit.
Okay.
Finally, we use Peter Piper. We use
Mardi Gras.
Yeah, yeah. We use Mardi Gras on it, right? Because Peter Piper was hitting. So he's like, fuck it. We're going to use this shit, too. And so it was a hit, and Dre was like, okay, damn, you know, you can write. Because these other motherfuckers I'm writing with, I can't get a hit with.
Right.
So from there, he was like, yo, I'm working with this young dude that we all knew named Eric. You know what I'm saying? Eric Wright. Working with Eric, man, and he need to do a record, man. You know, he got this group called HBO. They was trying to be like you.
HBO?
They was from New York. Homeboys Only.
Okay.
They was from New York, and they would wear their Kangos like LL. They was just trying to be straight like LL.
Right.
And so we thought, they from New York, they going to work.
Right.
This LA stuff ain't working. So wrote them a record, and
so they couldn't like rap. It. So
they was all right. But they didn't have no lyrics.
So even back then, there was a time where you could come up and say, I want to be a rapper, even if you didn't write for yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, it was a lot of dudes making.
So that shit ain't nothing new.
It ain't nothing new.
You know what I'm saying?
It ain't nothing new.
Can You Rock It Like This from Run DMC?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I ghost wrote for a few people. But
see, so but I'm saying that because this generation think that shit is something new. You know, when motherfuckers be writing, they find out, oh, such and such didn't write that song for themselves.
What it is there's different aspects of the game, right?
Okay.
He's talking about the recording process.
Right.
The recording process, definitely you could come up, I want to be a rapper, I want to record, I want to, you know, get a song,
right.
Write me a song. The MC shit at the party shit is some different shit.
Yeah, gotcha.
You come up with that at the party shit, you're just going to get served. And,
that's real.
Yeah.
So there's a such thing as an artist, and then there's an MC.
Yeah, you know, there's
MCs,
and then there's vocalists.
Right.
Stars.
Right. There's MCs, and there's vocalists.
Gotcha. You
I love the word vocalist.
Yeah. So
that's amazing. Yeah. Fucking vocalist. It's great.
So Dre was like, yo, write a song for these for Easy's group. Well, he wouldn't even name Easy. He was Eric. Write a song for Eric Group, HBO. So I went to school and wrote a song, and I came back, and they hated it. They was like, man, we don't know what ganking is. We don't know what a 64 is. Song's Boys in the Hood. Wrote it for him, and they rejected it.
Idiots.
They rejected it. So Dre got Easy to do it. And that's how he started to want to even rap.
Hey, right? Guess what?
And then he just...
He said that shit like look, he wrote it.
Let me tell you this. Let me tell you this. Easy turned into an MC. It was a person that I seen at first, but by the time he really got rolling, he was an MC. He was able to command stage.
Right.
He was able to just... Yeah, he was able to do it.
You a know, natural.
He just became a natural at it. So, you know...
Well, he was charismatic.
Yeah,
without a doubt.
He was charismatic. I remember being in the studio with Easy, and he had some kind of eyeball on his hand or something.
Yeah.
You know that tattoo? Yeah. And I said, I'm like, yo, Ease, because I just call him Ease. I'm like, yo, Ease, what's up with that eyeball on your hand? He's like, you don't want to know nothing about that. I said, you know what? You're right. How you said that? Yeah. I don't want to know about that shit. You know what I mean?
He was
a good dude.
Ease was an interesting cat.
I always tell the story, or should I say use the example. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times people talk about trap music, and of course they relate it to the actions and activities that come from our environments and try to make it out to be negative. Mm-hmm. And then I have to correct them and show them that, listen, we are a victim of circumstance. We are refugees of the crack era. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Mm-hmm. We survived the war on drugs. We veterans. Mm-hmm. We just happened to find a way to take our experiences, package them as philosophical presentation, set the music, and, you know, create a stream of revenue from it, given the blueprint that were laid by people like yourself. But I use Easy as an example when I say, hey, listen, of course we know that crack tore down communities and broke up families and locked people up, but it also gave us our first taste of business and how to run an operation. Mm-hmm. It, like, you know, whether it's packaging and distributions to manufacturing to, you know.
Well, every dark cloud has a silver lining.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah. And this one is, had Easy not been engaging in what he was engaging in and earned himself the liquidity to be able to invest in Ice Cube's and Dr. Dre's, it might not be a Big Three or a Beats by Dre today. You know what I'm saying?
It wouldn't. without a doubt. You know, we always knew how to handle business.
Sure.
You know, even before crack, you know what I'm saying? We always knew how to handle business. We had our own businesses.
Okay.
We was doing it. We was had our own communities. And what happened was, you know, through them desegregation and all that.
Sure.
Got that looted, Wall Street bomb.
Segregation and desegregation happened because of money, not because somebody wanted to be cool.
Right.
Not because somebody wanted to be fair.
Right.
It was like they spending all this money in their own community, but if we let them come down to Macy's, we let them come down to our, you know, little stores, they won't spend that money in their own neighborhood. They'll come down here and give it to us.
Right.
That's exactly what's happening. Mm-hmm. So we used to have all that, and we lost it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? We wanted to go downtown.
Thought the grass was greener.
Thought the grass was greener.
Yeah.
And taking money from Mr. Johnson and giving it to you know what I mean, Mr.
Neiman Marcus.
Yeah. Mr. Elmore. Mm-hmm. So, and then when crack and cocaine came around, some of us picked off where other generations left off.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? And turn a negative into a positive where we could. You know, a lot of guys who made a lot of money, they was always trying to flip it and figure out a way to legitimize it. So when you talk about a guy like Easy,
right,
that's what he did. You know, he got to a point where he said, this money is too dirty. I'm ready to get out this game.
That's right.
I'm ready to make it a positive thing. And anytime you're doing music, it's positive.
Right.
I don't care if you're talking Luke, Two Live Crew, you know what I mean?
As whatever
raw
it is,
as it can be.
It's expression.
It's still positive. You're right. Not doing the other thing, as my man says. So no matter what we talk about in our music, just the fact that we doing music and not out there with a pistol in our hand is positive.
Right. And you know, there's a lot of blessings in it. Like, I remember, you know, when I was coming up, because I made my first record. We started Def Jam when I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was coming up,
he said, we started Def Jam when I was 16.
Yeah,
it's real talk.
We're not gonna breeze by that.
Def Jam when I was 16.
Let's absorb that a little bit.
Yeah. It's crazy. And like, so, like, you think about the movie Paid in Full. Well, those were all my real friends, right?
Okay.
So like, you know, whether it's Alpo or, you know, Rich or, you know, AZ or, you know, me and my man Big Chuck, that's who I used to hang around with. When you look at the
I remember you talk about Big Chuck in the records.
When you look at my Walking with a Panther album, you see the Cool J rings and the Ice and the Minx and all that.
Right.
That's because that was an extension of all the people that I was hanging with at the time.
Right.
And what's interesting about it is, at that time, our community wasn't even ready for that.
Yeah.
It wasn't too many years later that they were even willing to accept Diamonds and Minx and Ice. Remember, back then they were looking at me like, that's not Chuck D wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Boo.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it was like X-Clan wouldn't do that.
When you look at it though, it kind of
L was always an innovator. You know, he always he worked with West Coast producers, you know, DJ Pooh.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying?
Bobcat.
And it bridged something for it kind of gave us hope to see Pooh and them with y'all and to see Bobcat with y'all, and it was like man, they on a whole nother level that we can get to. You know, it's dudes from our neighborhoods, dudes from our scene,
right?
You know, out there with LL, you know, the young phenom at the time. So it was incredible to see that, and it gave us hope that we can be as professional as the New York groups.
And I say the things that when I'm talking about Chuck and all them, the reason I bring that up is because, you know, what I learned in the process is that, first of all, the real hustlers don't want to be hustling.
That's real.
You know what I'm saying? They want to get away from that shit.
That's real.
The only people that want to hustle is people that don't know nothing about hustling.
They ain't never been to jail before.
You know what I'm saying? So they want to glamorize something.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? But they don't know that it's an addiction. It's hard to get out of that life.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? So
If the drugs don't kill you, the lifestyle will.
Exactly. So I learned a lot, you know, being around those guys, and it helped my thinking in a lot of ways, you know. It taught me about generosity. It taught me about manhood. I didn't talk about it quite as much in my music because at that time, personally, I went through so much stuff. I was trying to escape all that shit.
Certainly.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah. So all of that, even though, like, you know, I'm like the inverse of a lot of people. A lot of people, because if I told you all about my community, it would be like, you'd be like, fucking, your brains would explode. I mean, you're used to it, but you'd still be like, are you kidding me?
Right.
But I was doing everything I could to escape that shit.
That's right.
So the things I was talking about were kind of, a lot of it was the opposite of what I was experiencing, because I wanted to escape, man. I didn't want to think about that shit. It was terrible.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, and I say this, just this one little thing. When you see your father shoot your mother with a shotgun, you do the door, you know what I'm saying? It makes you kind of not want to rap about that shit. Yeah, I want to talk about something. I need love.
That's real.
I want to talk about something else. You know?
That's what Lonzo used to tell us all the time. Y'all want to rap about niggas going to jail? Nobody want to hear that shit.
But the ones that do.
It's like,
but for me, I just really believed in just escaping the madness, you know? The neighborhood was so hard.
Yeah.
And it's so rough out there.
Shit
is so crazy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's so crazy. So it's like, whereas somebody like a Cube or a Pac, they embraced it. And they because it's all pain, right? We talk about it in different ways. Even your first song, when you was talking about the big wheel, your very first
24s.
Video, yeah, on your 24s and all that. Talking about escaping, talking about getting out of that life.
Aspirations.
Yeah, man. You just want to just... I always wanted to just be more, learn more, do more. You know what I'm saying? I always had a vision. You know what I'm saying?
That's the main thing. That's key.
Yeah, vision.
To be able to dream, to have a vision. Yeah. And speaking of vision, I have a question for both of you, because both of you have very extensive legacies in film and television as producers as well as acting. The question is, when did both of you know when it was time to say, okay, this music is slowing me down. This is what I need to really focus on. And I'm asking that question for myself.
Mm-hmm. I don't think you ever put it down. Don't ever put the music down. I think the music is a great mortar for your bricks.
Okay.
So when you're doing these projects like a movie or a TV show, what's going to keep you really in the loop or in everybody's, you know, kind of psyche is the music.
Right.
Because the music is something you can do without a studio, without a big-ass production, without 100 people. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You can go in there and do a record at any time. And so never let that go. Never let that power of being able to put your...
Expression,
your thoughts, your perspective on the world, because sometimes they need it.
Right.
And so you always can fall back on that as something that keeps you creatively satisfied when movies and TV feel like a job sometimes. It feels like this shit is stagnant or it's already going in a certain direction.
Mm-hmm.
Creatively, I can't get off because
we're
just flowing in the direction and it's working, but it starts to feel 9-to-5-ish.
Mm.
So
too many rules.
We too creative.
A lot of them.
Right.
Not to do records.
That's real.
Because I think records allow us to deal with all these, to deal with the movies and the TV and the side shows.
Yeah.
The music really keeps us sane,
right,
to be honest.
And I would say that, you know, there's an old saying, you know, the cunning hare has more than one burrow, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or a smart rabbit has more than one hole they can hide in.
Okay.
So the thing is, like, you know, straight up, I ain't want to be a slave to the music industry.
I can dig
that. You know what
that.
I'm saying?
I felt
that. And the first time I sat in a meeting with an executive and said, you know, I'd like to get an advance for the next album. And they, like, adjusted from one cheek to the other. It was kind of like the cheek adjustment.
Yeah, yeah.
I got the cheek adjustment. When they hit me with the cheek adjustment, I was like, oh, word, you adjusted your cheeks? I'm going to do TV.
Yeah.
I'm going to do TV. Because, you know, that's the thing, too. Like, you know, you want to, you know, you don't want to have to do anything.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? See, you know, and I'm very thankful. See, I don't have to do nothing.
Right on.
You know, I can take my ball and go home. You know what I'm saying? I do, you know, I'm doing it from the love and you know, because I really appreciate it. And because, you know, don't get me wrong, I like to work and I want to continue to work. And, you know, but I do it from a different space. Like I understand the upside of business, and you know, there's plenty of success for me to have. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying like I'm done. Right. There's a difference between checks and checkmate.
There you go.
You know what I mean? I'm still checks.
Yeah.
You know, checkmate's a little different.
Nah, man. You know, but you're richer than ever, though.
But I'm doing okay.
Nah, but you're richer than ever, though.
You know, you know
exactly
what I'm saying?
I know exactly how well you do.
So I just believe that. Like what Cube was saying about the creative side, that part is very, very important.
Uh-huh.
And the other side is you don't want to ever be in a position where you're limiting yourself, where you gotta do something.
See, that brings me to,
you know what I mean?
Now that I've heard you guys and how you in your perspective, I will share with you mine. I feel in this day and age, okay, the term rapper, it really concerns me.
Okay.
And I tell you why.
Okay.
Back when you started, you call yourself a rapper, it was only one or two or three motherfuckers who could really work hard enough to reach a point of acceptance to where you could say that you were a professional rapper.
Mm-hmm.
So it was something to be, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
A chosen few.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cut to today. With, and now it's a gift and a curse, you know, and I don't want to alienate y'all, but if you get in your feelings about it, fuck you. So with today, okay, you got YouTube, world star, you know, there is no real gatekeeper to say, okay, yes.
Feel this like they is, threw the mic
you're
in the
ready.
Audience.
Said, you're ready.
Just go for it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yo, just throw the mic in the
so,
audience.
Yeah.
If get busy.
If you're going to call me a rapper,
right.
You know what I'm saying, with all the work that I've done, the things that I've produced, and the, you know, as far as I've come, you're going to call me a rapper, and then this guy who just uploaded his video on YouTube today,
right.
You're going to call him a rapper too.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we gonna have to, something has to be done because, you know what I'm saying? We have to actually classify what a rapper is.
I think, you know, that's like being called a basketball player, you know?
But they won't call you a pro basket. You're not a basketball player till you go pro or now recently to the big three.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
What I would say is that I think that I know what you're saying, but personally, I wear rapper like a badge because I think, you know, the thing is this, just be great. See, the difference is that, yeah, a lot of guys is rappers, but are you a great one? And are you pushing the culture forward and have you taken it to new heights?
That's right.
So it's not a question. It's nothing to be ashamed. Like my thing is this, like, I feel like somewhere along the line, especially with the internet and with everything that's happened.
It's saturation.
Not only saturation,
it's just saturation.
But there's another part. I feel like a lot of us, you know, we're uncomfortable with the idea of just being artists.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Being an artist is not a negative.
That's real.
You know what I'm saying? Being an artist is all right. Like, everybody, you know, we're in this music and we want to be called a businessman. We want to be called an entrepreneur. We want to be called a mogul, a tycoon. We look for all of these other titles because we're uncomfortable, like you said, with the idea of just being a rapper. But if you are a great artist and a great rapper that does many things, and you have a huge and big career, and you do a lot of great shit, your track record is going to speak for itself. So they could call me a rapper. You could say, oh, LL Cool J is a rapper. Okay. But when you go down to the Smithsonian and you see my portrait in the National Portrait Gallery, you know.
It's going to say mogul.
It can say rapper on that motherfucker. It can say whatever you want it to say. But when you go down to the Smithsonian, you see the guy on the wall, painted by the same guy who painted Obama.
Okay.
So the difference is, you are a great rapper. You made that trap. First of all, you created a genre, all right? They following you. You created an entire genre, in my opinion, with the trap music. Like, you, to me, brought the South to that other level with that particular thing.
Well,
you know what I'm saying? Personally,
it just happens to be fact.
You know what I'm saying?
It just happens to be fact. That is factual.
So the thing is, you are
It don't, like, they got, look, a single and a song and being a rapper and, right. you know, buying diamonds up to your Adam's apple. I get it. Yeah. I get it. I ain't mad at you. You know, you want your shit up here. You want your diamond neck brace on and all that shit. I get it.
Hey, the but baguette yo, turtleneck.
Yeah, the baguette turtleneck and shit. I get it. Yeah. I'm with it. But, yo, you great. Like so I would say... Be a rapper, just be great at what you're doing. If you want, if you're honestly more than that, right. then that's fine.
Right.
But never be uncomfortable
right.
with the who you are and what you are, because you're great at it.
I mean, I say it like this. The reason you're uncomfortable with it, because rapper now, from
the connotation,
basically white folks' point of view,
right.
is like they dissing you. They dismissing you. They mm-hmm. like, you know, he's just
yeah.
a rapper.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And, that may be a subconscious and possibility.
Yeah, yeah, I feel the same
be.
Shit.
It may be.
So it's a thing where okay. it's like they're being dismissive. But that to me lets you know.
Even you, our own people
you,
now.
You really? Well.
Even our own people.
Our own people follow white folks. You know what I'm saying?
Some of them do.
They follow white folks.
Yeah, yeah.
They follow white
the
folks.
Vast majority.
But I'm just saying. They trying to use it to make you feel
like a derogatory
not,
term.
Not as big as you are.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So that's probably what pisses you off. But to me, don't matter what they call us.
Right.
Matters what we call us.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? Matters what we call ourselves.
That's so, real.
You know, we got a lot of titles.
Sure.
You know, rapper's just one of them.
That's but, right.
You know, tell them to break down everything I do. You know, you probably need... Go get a lunch.
Some more adjectives.
You know what I'm saying?
Some more adjectives.
I'm more than everything you think I am.
Yes,
so
yeah.
so yeah. It, I agree with L. I agree with you. You know, it's a thing where you got to wear it as a badge. Just because they want you to feel uncomfortable when
exactly.
they call you that.
Sure.
You know, you just got to check them, you know. More than a rapper, but we can start there.
We can start there.
Yeah, you know,
okay.
I started there.
It's part
so
of what I do.
Yeah,
hey.
It's part of what
yeah,
I do. You know, and just... That's what you're feeling is them being dismissive and trying to say, well, trying to, you know, it's kind of like a dog whistling away
right.
to the other folks. Don't take him as serious.
He's just a rapper.
He's just a rapper.
Right.
But they can't help but take you serious mm-hmm. because if anybody listening.
But I'll tell you, you know, people say that, but then that, you know, when you tell them, oh, when you tell somebody you made it out of the hood, you made it out of the ghetto, you're talking to a journalist. White journalists, maybe.
Right.
They'll say, well, how'd you do it? Well, first of all, my first thought is, why are you asking me that? Are you going to try to shore up some holes so
yeah,
no one else can do
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Like, fuck you, why are you asking me that shit? That's the way, what the fuck you mean? Well, how did I do it? Like, what's
how the fuck you get out of college with a 2.2?
You know what I mean? But there's that part of how'd you do it. But then the reality is, being a rapper is the thing that took these young brothers, a lot of them would know without diplomas.
Sure.
A lot of them high school dropouts.
A
lot of them, you know, dropping out in early grade school.
Sure.
Took us out of the hood, allowed us to take care of our families,
yep.
cultures.
Yep.
I mean, I'm here supporting my man who's the founder of an entire basketball league
yeah.
that is extending the careers of some of our favorite players.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? You know, like... That's what a rapper can do.
That's right.
So my thing is, yeah, I'm a rapper, but like he said, go get lunch
sure.
and study what we did.
The rest
and
of
what we're doing. The rest of it.
Like my homeboy Pee Wee Roscoe would say, when you get through with the bullshit.
Right. Because yeah. it's like a restaurant,
when you get
right?
through, you know what I mean? It's all on the menu.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, now this is just a reminder for everybody to go to expeditiously.com to get all of your Expeditiously merch. And if you don't know how to spell it, look it up, motherfucker. It's the information age. Expeditiously.com. You ain't even got to make the TI capital in the middle, man. But go and get your merch right now, man, because it is available. And I can tell you, you know, with a clear conscience and a pure heart, you buy it, you wear it, you look better. All right, man, you know what I'm saying? That's enough cap for today, and I'll see y'all later. Expeditiously. Hey, where you think you going? The show ain't over yet, man. Expeditiously continues. It takes me to my next topic. Cube, you actually created an entire fucking basketball league, bro.
Yeah,
Like an entire, like it's on TV and everything. You know what I'm saying? Like you cut checks and you know, and you had you employ thousands of people.
Hundreds so far.
A lot of people.
Well, put a little cap on that, but you know what I'm saying? Hundreds is closer to thousands than zero. Man, that is astronomical.
Yeah, man, it's major. It's one of the biggest things I ever did in my career.
Dope. What made you say at one point in time, after you've already been this legendary, this mythical kind of glorious creature of history? Like, that's what, hey, listen, man, in the hood, bro, from the late 90s all the way up to present day, you are one of both of you. You guys is like, if we were in Rome, your ass would be outside the Colosseum with a statue. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I'm saying? If we were white Republicans, you'd be on the side of a mountain. Right. You dig what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But this shit has carried you all the way here, bro. At what point did you actually realize? Did it hit you and say, man, I'm going to do this? Because the vision is what's most important.
Seeing something that I would go to, like, you know, me and my wife, we love basketball. So
Are y'all fans of the same team?
Yeah, we love the Lakers.
Okay, the Lakers. Okay.
Yeah, Laker time.
Right on.
Yeah, so if something that I know, if this was in existence, we go.
Like,
we got to go down to the big three. Something like, that's where it all starts. It's something that I feel like, damn, there's a lot of people out there that's like me.
Right.
Especially in the summer, where
after the finals.
If you like basketball and football, you might as well hibernate in the summer, because shit is boring.
From late June to early September.
It's dead.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I'm like, damn, it's a window.
Yeah.
And 3-on-3.
So that was a conscious decision.
Yes.
Go between the finals and football.
Week after the finals and in before the first game of the season.
That's always been the vision. That's dope.
And so it was all about, you know, talking to people, just letting the idea germinate.
Right.
You know what I mean? And just really working it, thinking of all the angles, thinking of all the structure, doing all the homework, all the pros and cons we thought of before. Like, why is this a good idea? Why is this a bad idea? What can make this work? What can make this fail?
Right.
And just be totally honest. And it was more things that would work than could fail.
That makes sense.
We said, okay, you know, do we have enough talent to put this together?
Mm.
And, you know, looking at my partner Jeff, his background as a promoter, he's done filled up a lot of arenas.
That's right.
Filled up a lot of stadiums with different artists, you know, had groups. So we know that game. We know how to get people in a building.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Right. And we just get the right basketball people, you know, Clyde Drexler, Amy Trask, somebody that knows sports. Dr. J.
Yeah.
We start getting them names. We knew we couldn't start a league unless we had these names.
And the guys
of basketball.
But clear enough to be, like, just to provide some clarity, people that the NBA no longer employed.
Yes.
People that the NBA did not see fit to continue to pay.
Yes. Well, can I dive in on that? Because I think it's important to say just about what Cube is saying. The difference, I think, is that his passion as a fan of basketball, I think, bleeds over into the league.
That's right.
And it bleeds over into the league in a big way, because a lot of those people that are no longer employed by the NBA, that's business.
Right.
And this is business too, but the difference is he did it from a place of love.
Yeah.
His love and business can mix.
It can.
You can love what you're doing and put love into business.
Speaking,
you know what I'm saying?
Speaking of what you said earlier, when you said it's a blessing to be an artist, you're absolutely correct, because if you are blessed to do what you love for a living, then you never work a day in your life.
Absolutely.
And it's a shame, you know. I had empathy
right.
and sympathy, you know.
Right.
If somebody walked up to you at 30 years old and said, hey, yo, L, no more records. Wow. No more movies. No more TV.
They don't want you no more. It's over with.
Tip.
You're up next.
You got 2 years. And it's over, baby.
Your day's a number.
We're going in another direction.
Yeah.
How would that make us feel, man? Feel crazy. And how much good shit
would they miss on?
How much good shit people would miss just because somebody came to us at 30 years old and told us we out the game. So
that's crazy.
I feel for these dudes, and I see that when we do this big three, they getting a spirit back.
Right.
It's therapy for them.
That's right.
A lot of dudes, they don't need the money. They got rings. They just want to ball. They just want to be a professional athlete.
For the love of the game.
They love walking in the tunnel of the arena.
6'7" in the air. You know what I'm saying? 6'9" in the air. And they've been playing basketball their whole life. And now somebody want to put a mic in and say, well, try to do this. And it's like, nah, man, I want to ball. I could still ball to these... to these knees tell me no, I want to play. And to have a place, and you see somebody like Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, 50 years old, still out there balling with dudes that's 27.
Damn.
It showed them, keep yourself in shape.
That's right.
You can be in the big three in 10 years if you
that's
want
right.
to.
That's real.
You know what I'm saying?
That's
so real. It's, to me, man, that's what it's all about.
And it's big business, man. Selling out arenas doing this, you know what I'm saying? And I also thought it was extremely smart the way you go in most of the markets that don't have NBA teams.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
That's part of the plan, you know, to have this. You know, we looked at NASCAR.
Mm.
You know, NASCAR, they basically own all the cars, really. You know what I mean? You pay $60 million, $100 million, and you can put a car in. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's just it. But they can barnstorm around the country.
Right.
Go anywhere, do a sanctioned NASCAR race.
Okay.
It was like, why connect these teams to states and cities where we'd be locked in? Why not just say,
look, flexible and fluid.
Yeah.
Right.
Plus, kids are now, they more in the players than they are in the teams.
It's
and
like fantasy. It's the fantasy.
Yeah,
that
so
makes sense.
We felt like they'll be into, you know, the they'll find their teams and lock in.
Do you have trades?
It's such a clear.
Do you have trades?
We got trades. We got combine.
Is there a cap?
Like yes, a cap. Everybody get paid the same. Everybody get paid the same.
Well,
but MFN.
They got revenue share.
Oh, that's dope. That's dope.
And you share as you place.
Yeah. Okay.
So if you place 12th, you get 12th place money.
Mm.
If you place first, you get first place money.
Yeah.
So that's the incentive. Fine. So it's a flat fee, but then there's the incentive to place
win.
Win so you can get more money.
Man, what are your thoughts on the pros and cons of Jay's decision to work with the NFL? I'll let you speak and I'll share my thoughts.
To me, I don't see it as being a big issue. I think, you know, either they're going to hire Live Nation or they're going to hire Roc Nation.
That's real.
You know, why not let Roc Nation do what Live Nation was going to do?
Right.
Live Nation was going to get that money. Wasn't nobody going to say nothing.
Right.
But now Jay-Z doing it and everybody's saying something. When it comes to cap, he had a settlement now.
Yeah, that ain't.
Now look.
I'm gonna save my comment.
When you get a settlement,
after y'all speak.
When you get a settlement, that means you done got paid. Go on, step back, bruh. You got your money. You know what I mean? Go on, step back. And to be honest, the NFL could never solve the problem that Kaepernick was talking about.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It's apples and oranges. Cap is talking about police brutality.
Mm-hmm.
The NFL has nothing to do with that. All the NFL has is a platform. And they're willing to use their platform now to speak out against it.
Right.
So let's use the platform.
Right.
Let's let them spend that money.
Right.
You know what I mean? Why let them off the hook? Mm-hmm. And they're using somebody who can get money back to the culture.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I don't have a problem with it whatsoever.
Okay.
I think that one, the pendulum always swings between really logical, reasonable thinking, chance and luck, and passion, right?
Mm-hmm.
And emotions.
Yeah.
Can't really have a logical conversation about and a really, really emotional topic. It's like trying to negotiate with a business person across this table from you who's hysterically crying. Okay? It just, you know, and all your points are correct.
Yeah.
Okay?
But you don't understand.
Yeah. So when it comes to this topic, that's kind of like what we're dealing with in the world. I think what has happened is, you know, our culture, we're big fans of lions.
Mm.
And we don't really understand foxes.
Mm.
You know? And I think that really is, that's a tough one, because emotional people understand lions.
Right.
And what they symbolize.
Right.
Foxes, it takes a different type of mentality and mindset to understand.
You have to be cunning.
Right. So, but to explain cunning... you see?
You're falling on deaf ears.
You see?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I think that you're just going to always have both sides of that issue.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you just, because you, and you have, remember, we talked about visionaries and people that are pragmatic.
Right.
And people that are more practical. You're going to always have those that are about vision.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have those that are about results. Now, right? So some people, they can kind of see what the guy is doing, what mm-hmm. Jay is doing with that, and others only want to sit back with their arms folded and wait to see how it shakes out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the split. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Personally, I understand what he's doing. I get it, and I see the vision.
Right.
But at the same time, I do understand there are some people who cannot get past the pain.
Hmm.
They can't get past the pain to have a conversation about, you know, some people, you know, it's kind of like, you know, and you would even be better at this. It's like gangbanging, right? Mm-hmm. Some guys can have a conversation about peace, and some people just want to clean their guns. They ain't hearing that shit, right? And I think that's just to break it down in society, in our culture, that's what we're dealing with.
Right, but see, in gangbanging, what I could really respect is the motherfuckers who don't really want to talk about shit, just cleaning their gun, they actually going out there doing something. You know what I'm saying? And this, most of the motherfuckers with their arm folded ain't doing a motherfucking thing.
You know, but you know what, Tim? You know what it is? And we've heard it
all. They emotional.
And they watch the NFL every Sunday.
But you know what?
Now, I went a whole year last year, didn't watch no football.
I mean, you got conviction, brother.
But you know what I'm saying?
What do everybody got, right? They got an asshole
and an opinion. Yeah.
and look, and they both stink.
Yeah, exactly.
And they both stink.
So it's like, I think he has a vision.
Right.
And, you know, for those who trust him.
Right.
And trust that.
And let his reputation speak for him.
Yeah, those who trust his integrity and believe in his integrity, they'll see it one way.
He's a leader and always has been a leader of the culture.
Somebody black getting the bag from the NFL.
Right.
Let's salute it and see what it turns into.
And even more than that. It's the first black person from our culture to ever even be considered for inclusion. If you're going to change something, anything, it must be done from the inside.
But always remember, man, pioneers always catch arrows.
That's real.
You know, when you're the first one to touch down on the beach.
I always tell them, when you're the first one to kick down the door, expect to get shot.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. When you're the first one to kick down the door, expect to get shot. Now, the dudes behind you can run in like zombies. But the first few, expect to take. Y'all falling.
That's why they call it the death funnel.
Y'all heard
that doorway.
You know, it's sacrifice. It's no progress. Without some sacrifice.
Yeah.
Cap sacrificed. And hopefully there's progress behind that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, I think. And, you know, and then look, if, you know, hopefully his deal is tight and hopefully he learned from his experience with the Nets so that it turns out the right way.
Yeah. I mean, listen, so
this is how I feel. First of all, I feel that it's too many motherfuckers with strong opinions that do absolutely nothing to push people forward. All they do is sit back and share their opinion. I also feel that Jay has been nothing but exemplary in showing how to not only lead the culture, but create opportunities for the culture and be there to advance.
Yeah.
Thank you, bro.
And this, to me, feels like a step in the right direction. You know what I mean? Because the NFL could have done, they could have done a deal with anybody. So the same way all of the critical thinkers and the people, the naysayers who looking down on Jay for this, I want y'all to just stop and think about how those racist hillbilly redneck white boys looking at the NFL for doing the deal with Jay. Mm-hmm. So I support him more so for that than anything else.
And the key,
he pissing their ass off.
And the key,
you know what I mean?
The key with it is the key with
this man ain't even got a clean haircut. You dig what I'm saying? He not even trying to make it look. He ain't even fitting in no corporate structure. The man did his press conference in a motherfucking Run DMC t-shirt, man, where I had to be in. You know what I mean? Yeah. So that shit, to me, he's showing them that they have to accept our culture if they want to accept our dollars.
Yeah. The key is for him to just get in the door and leave it open.
That's it.
That's the key.
And as far as the cap thing,
it'll be fine.
As far as the
door is closed, it's going to be nasty. Just keep the door open.
As far as the cap thing goes, right? Every time somebody says something to me about it, I say the same thing Cube said. Yo, cuz got a settlement. They settled.
Yeah.
They settled. They got an undisclosed amount of money.
Ain't nobody
going to
sue me, and I'm going to hire him. Shit,
you better take
your little settlement and get the fuck out of my
house. Shoot. I mean, it's almost like it's kind of like all three of us. If I got a problem, all three of us or this entire room goes to the place I experience this problem. When I get to that place, if I shake hands with the motherfucker I got a problem with, then what the rest of the room got a problem for? Yeah.
But you know what? Can I say just one thing?
The rest of the room ain't got no reason. Y'all can't fight if I ain't fighting no more.
You know what else, though, Tip? You also have to remember that, you know, and I say this.
And I say that in full support of Cap, by the way.
No, I understand.
And I told him, every time I talk to him, I say, listen, man, I support you, and I'm down to do whatever you need to do. But me personally, I think you're stronger outside of the NFL to show that you can still live, exist, and be who you are and still and live for a purpose without them paying you. Because when a person pays you, that shows that you are in some way kind of you are encumbered by them.
Also, you have to remember that, you know, success is its own language. Everybody doesn't speak that language.
Mm.
Everybody doesn't understand success. Some people speak failure, and they understand failure. So they're applying the language of failure to the. They're trying to read this book of success when they only
understand
read
the language
of failure.
So
when you're trying to. When you going in there trying to read, like...
I want y'all to rewind that shit and listen to it again.
You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying?
You know what I mean? This will be on the test.
You know what I'm saying? They don't get it. So a lot of times, that's what we deal with. So you trying to explain... Like, they really are two different languages.
That's real.
People that fail consistently in their thinking, in their behavior, in their habits, in their mindset, do not understand the language of success.
Yeah.
Period. It's like, how could I be a translator for a Chinese company? I don't understand Chinese. I don't speak Chinese. Maybe y'all got one on me. I don't speak Chinese. But so that's the thing I think that we deal with a lot of times.
Sure.
When things get out into the, you know, the on the internet.
People who understand the language of failure trying to communicate success.
Exactly. Trying to read that. Trying to read that book.
You got to make the moves you feel
intuitively right.
Without listening to, you know, the naysayers, you know, without listening to what they call the choir. You know what I'm saying? You don't want to listen to the choir. So you want to do your thing. And sometimes, you know, to me, if I do it my way, even if it fail, I'm more satisfied than I have, if I had done it somebody else when it succeeded. Because I'd be off balance doing it somebody else's way.
Right.
Even and you couldn't incorporate the learning.
Yeah, and I couldn't really maybe duplicate that. But when you do it your way, win, lose, or draw, you feel like you wasn't pushed, pulled, dragged.
Right.
Your decision.
Right.
You know, we win together, we lose together, so to speak. So, you know, you listen to the choir.
I think you know, it's two things that what both of you said that brings back to mind the language of failure versus the book of success. It reminds me of my buddy PK Pretty Ken. He's also a co-host here, and he said to me, he say, man, you know, niggas would rather bask in the comfort of being a failure rather than being a winner and have to deal with that discomfort.
Because when you win, you don't know.
Yeah.
Winning is scary. Yeah. You know, yeah, I mean, like.
But if once you've been a disappointment one time, you know what I mean? You've already accepted it. This is old news. What do you mean? Oh, I'm a failure. Oh, yeah. What else is new? Why you bringing that up? Everybody knows. So what? What else is new? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But stepping out there, man, and putting your all into something, stepping out on the line, going against the grain, swimming upstream, that shit takes courage.
Not only that, because remember, if you're going to succeed or win at anything, you got to risk looking stupid.
That's real.
You're going to have to risk looking stupid.
And a lot of motherfuckers
on
don't.
On some level. Yeah. Like, people, you know, you're going to have to risk that.
You must.
That. So you got to have that thick skin. You got to be like, yo, you know, that's why, like, the whole rapper thing, like, yo,
That's why most good-looking people, you know most good-looking people, most niggas who already know that they look good, you know what I'm saying? We're the most successful one. That's why when a motherfucker who is contrary to that, it's like, whoa, this is an anomaly. You know what I'm saying? Because we know we have very low risk chance of looking stupid. You know what I'm saying? You could take 12 pictures of me and 9 of them going to be good.
Yeah, but
whether I was paying attention
or
not.
I'm talking about just funny. I'm talking about the actions, though. And the results. The results of actions are the things I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the visual aesthetic appearance. I'm talking about the results of your actions.
People laughing because it didn't work, you said.
Because it didn't work.
Yeah.
So you're going to risk looking, you know, you have to succeed, you must risk failure.
Yeah.
You must risk failing in order to succeed.
Some people won't even try if they don't believe they can win.
But what Cube said, it brought to mind one of my favorite quotes, and I say it often. If you live for the cheers, you will die by the booze. You dig what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If you make your moves and you feel validation and you are directed in one direction or another based off people cheering for you, wanting people to approve.
No, you gotta know your own value.
If you do that, when they turn against you and they start booing you saying you ain't shit, well, you'll never come back.
Yeah, I always say
that's why I think if Mayweather lose one fight, he'll never fight again. I always said that.
Don't play to the cheap seats.
You dig what I'm saying?
Don't play to the cheap seats.
Mm-hmm.
Don't play to the cheap seats, man.
Mm-hmm.
That make all the sense in the world.
Yeah.
I hope y'all got your bowl and your spoon out, man. You know what I'm saying? Because it's plenty of game, man, being goddamn pulled out on you, man. So, and again, I really, truly appreciate you guys, man, sharing this moment, taking the time out, because this is shit they don't have to do. I did not pay
we
them.
We need a part two to this, man.
Man, absolutely.
You know, a couple of months.
Man, I can't wait, man. So, anytime you guys, man, of course, both of you have my numbers, and you both have accepted me with open arms and been incredibly supportive and insightful throughout my journey as an artist. And as a young man, you know, growing into an industry I was unfamiliar with, both of you have set examples for me and guided me, whether you knew it or not. So I thank you for that. And a lot of niggas, you know, gonna be, you know, they ain't gonna tell you, but I want you to know that you both have paved the way for me. And I am very well off and rich from it. So thank you so much.
Man.
You know what I'm saying?
We proud of you. You know what I mean? To me, it's only you know, you look at generations behind you and see the ones that's doing it right. It's only a few of them, you know what I'm saying?
That's right. That's right.
One of them. So, yeah, you know, I'm always
love and respect.
Always,
always.
You know, I'm always happy to see you coming.
Already.
And, you know, yeah. and it's dudes, you either like to see him coming. Oh, you hate to see
this motherfucker.
You know what I'm saying?
Or this motherfucker.
It's usually the ugly motherfuckers that don't look good. But I always got a problem.
I ain't messing with
now
you.
Now I got to look at my lady where she looking, hold her hand. Hey, man, love expeditiously, love, man,
expeditiously,
in a minute. Thanks for listening to Expeditiously with me, T.I.P. Don't forget to subscribe at Apple Podcasts and Podcast One and rate and review, please. Do it expeditiously.
Expeditiously is produced, engineered, and edited by KC Morris.